It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie, Andy Iannocco, and Jim Dalrymple are here. And of course, we have new Macs to talk about, new iPads as well. We'll explain what's new and what's not new. We'll also talk about the Big Apple event coming up on Monday and what Google announced earlier today, its online gaming service. There's a lot to talk about, and it's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 653, recorded Tuesday, March 19th, 2019. The Courage Port. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Oura Ring, the most accurate sleep and activity tracker. Visit AuraRing.com and use the code TWIT for $50 off your purchase. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use invoicing and accounting software. If you don't believe us, try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. And by Hover. Register a domain name and build your online brand with Hover. Visit Hover.com/TWIT to get 10% off your first purchase on any domain extension for the entire first year. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And the Applers are assembling. Renee Ritchie is here from iMore.com and the Vector Podcast. Hi, Renee.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
You have the blinds drawn, which tells me you have blinding snow out the window.
No, I have. This one is open, but it is so bright that it feels like it's washing me out. So I closed it halfway because it's hitting the snow. The entire river is frozen. It's hitting that giant snow ice pile and then blasting me in the face. And unlike Superman, I cannot absorb its power for myself.
The entire river is frozen. No, the entire country is frozen.
So what it did is it snowed, melted, iced, froze. Snow melted, ice froze. Now we have the world's largest snow and ice coffee crisp. Cake. We're just all living under. Yes, it's a layer cake.
And Jim knows about that because he's from the Maritimes. Jim Dalrymple.
Yes.
Loopinsight.com. How you doing, Leo? That's great to have you. He's moved, of course, to southern climes. Now in Silicon Valley.
Now in California.
Yeah. Smart man.
So now so I just make fun of Renee.
Although it was 74 degrees yesterday.
Laughs.
The river's frozen. The whole thing's frozen.
The man listens to the weather report and then calls me and laughs. It is amazing.
Well, there's always room down here for you, Renee. Just want you to keep that in mind. I don't think you want to evacuate, though, just yet. This might be going from the frying pan to the fire. It's warmer, but maybe too warm. Also here, Andy Iannocco from Boston Public Radio and Iannocco.com. Hello, Andrew.
Hello. But it must be disappointing that you don't get so many moose sightings in the Bay Area.
Do you miss the moose?
I truly hate to say this, but that noise in the background is the gardener. So
we actually had a moose on the road like a month ago. There was one that crossed over the ice and was just walking around the street, down the street.
This was a big week. Mark Gurman called it last week. He tweeted, Apple will probably clear the deck for their March 25th announcement, their upcoming Monday announcement about Apple News and Apple TV, and get the new hardware out of the way this week. And he couldn't have been more right. New iPads announced yesterday. New iMacs announced today.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm still waiting for new MacBooks. You think they'll do that or wait for WWDC?
The 12-inch?
Or that rumored 16-inch, a 15-inch with a...
Not yet. Anything that's a new design is going to get its own show like later this year.
Yeah. So that's what these all have in common. They're refreshes of existing designs.
Right. No retooling necessary.
Actually, in a way, I understand why Apple didn't update the iPad Air and the iPad Mini. I mean, they put 12 A12 Bionic processors in them, so that's a big internal update. But they've got the home button. They've got the same bezel size, and they have the Courage port. And it feels now fairly retro to still offer iPads like that, if those are your new ones.
Well, they did add pencil support, and for the iPad Mini, I think that's a huge, huge thing.
But the old pencil, not the new pencil.
Oh, wow, wow, wow! Cry me a river. Oh no, I only get 1028 levels of support, and it doesn't have a magnet in it. Oh no, I have to be aware of it rolling off my desk. I'll take it for everything that I love about the iPad Mini, plus having pencil support, so I can take notes and I can draw. Really, the only thing that's ever tempted me about Samsung phones has been that S Pen, having a hand-sized thing that has a really, really good stylus on it. And now, I mean, I was still using my iPad Mini second generation as late as like 4 days ago. And this has got me excited about having a second iPad in the house in addition to my iPad Pro.
Yeah, and in fact, I understand why Apple also did it because they can keep the prices down, and they probably have a...
Well, you'd have to retool it, right? Like, you'd have to make the edge flat. You'd have to insert the inductive charging unit, and then it would be an iPad Pro, and they'd be charging iPad Pro prices, and they wouldn't have their medium tier.
But right. it's kind of like a car manufacturer selling this year's car and 12 years ago's car. It's a little weird to have that product line.
Well, maybe it's a little weird to have a brand new Apple Pencil that doesn't work with every single model of iPad. But I'm perfectly fine with them keeping hardware support for legacy iPads. It really does show how important the iPad is to Apple, that they want to have this variety of hardware, but also this variety of price points out there. So this is really, really a huge, huge, huge statement about how big they think the iPad is, not just for education and not just for $1,000 laptop replacements to compete with high-end Chromebooks and medium-priced Windows machines, but actually just as a platform, as an ecosystem into which sells.
I have to now go find – maybe why I'm complaining is I have to now go find my old pencil.
Well, it's the $499 price point too. It's like that original iPad price point. That, yes, you know, the original iPad had it, and then we went through the Airs, and the Airs too.
The magic $500 price point. Yeah.
And I have to find it again. But my favorite tweet was from the gentleman who runs Android Police, and it was from David Ruddock, where he said Apple just launched a $500 iPad that pretty much fatally kills the Pixel Slate and didn't even bother having an event for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it took much to kill the Pixel Slate, to be honest with you. So I think it also reminds me of what Apple did in the mature era of the iPod, where they started to fill in the price gaps.
Yeah.
So that there was – so now there's a $329 iPad, and there's a whatever you want to pay iPad, $1,200 iPad. And there's – but there's pretty good, you know, divisions along the way. So you could pick the price point you want.
Yeah, I do think that this indicates how much competition Apple feels for those devices and at those price points. The fact that they don't feel the need to give you that they in laptops, they don't feel the need to give you a whole range of prices, because I feel as though they don't feel as though they've got a lot of competition, that they're serving Mac users who are not very, very inclined to switch to Windows or switch to Chromebook. However, at the sub $1,000 price point, they're feeling pressure from all sides, including from people who are going to start to think that, gee, I've got this phone. It's got this wonderful high density screen. It's actually really, really big. What do I need a $500 computer for? I think that part of it is not only filling in the price points and not only chasing after everybody for every budget to make sure that they get money from somebody for a shiny new iPad, but also realizing that they need to have an answer to the question of why would I spend $400 more for an iPad when $500 will buy me this, which is a very, very capable, incredible little laptop, or a very, very capable, incredible little tablet. They're saying, well, don't spend $400 more. Give us $500. We'll give you something that doesn't snoop on your security and it's way, way more secure.
And Jim can put it in his back pocket.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of people that that just don't need the power of an iPad Pro, you know, the highest end model that's out now. There's a ton of people that will be satisfied with the new models that are out now and don't even need pencil support.
Right.
You know, and I'm talking people that use it as an auxiliary device. You could even use that as your full-time device and be perfectly happy with the speed and everything that comes out of it. I mean, my grandmother, 90 years old, never wanted a computer, but she's had an iPad for a few years. I mean, obviously she's not going to need a pencil unless she has some Picasso yearnings in there somewhere that I don't know about. But, you know, I really don't think that this is a bad release at all.
And certainly anybody who is holding out hope that the Mini was not dead is going to be gratified. This is a
absolutely.
Yeah, great to keep it alive. Although when you put them together, and by the way, Apple's press release did say the most complete lineup of iPads ever. So they're making that point. And when you put them together, it just looks like the iPads with the Touch ID and the home button and the camera and the big bezels just feels so, to me, so old-fashioned. But
well, that inspires you to upgrade. But see, like, my mom has the original 12-inch iPad Pro, and she's been using an iPad Air. She has high-availability iPads.
And she I wonder why.
iPad Air 2 is, she has an iMac, but she almost never uses it. For her, and she calls her iPad her computer, and for her, it's the most approachable computer she's ever had. You know, and, you know, my father was an IBM engineer and he's had computers all my life, and she just didn't grok them, but the iPad she does everything on, and the iPad Air 2 is getting a little bit long in the tooth, so she's like, my birthday is coming up, that new 10.5 iPad looks amazing.
That's the one she wants, not the 11-inch.
She wants that one.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And my sister has the 9.7-inch iPad Pro and an older iPad Mini, like the iPad Mini 3, and she's like, yeah, the 3 is kind of old too. My birthday is coming up. I want that new Mini. So it's going to be like iPads. My family has just got big iPad love.
So for $329, you can get the base model 9.7-inch iPad. For $499, you can get that kind of perfect middle-of-the-road iPad Air 2. And for $799, you can get the 11-inch iPad Pro. I think that does look kind of like a nice lineup. And everything supports a pencil of one kind or another. I'm sure at some point Apple would like to settle on one pencil, though, right?
When they have more distinguishing features in the Pro, that's what they do. Like the Pro gets a new feature and it keeps it for a little while until it gets something else new. And then that previous new feature drops down to the lower end.
Yeah.
So like it had Pencil and then it had the smart keyboard. Then it got much bigger and the Pencil dropped down and then it got the new design and the keyboard. You know, so as it gets new differentiators, things that make it decidedly more Pro, Apple feels comfortable moving the other stuff down into the lowest end, the entry level line to make it more attractive.
But to be clear, something that Apple's done with iPads and iPhones as of the last edition is to keep all of the devices very powerful.
Yeah, A12 in the new iPads. The A10 is still in the 329 model. What's the difference between the A12 Bionic and the A12X Bionic that's in the iPad Pros?
So the A12 it's the X. A12 has
the X. Thank you. Jim always cuts right through to the
It's X-ier. Four efficiency cores and two performance cores instead of four and four, and it's got four GPUs instead of seven GPUs, I believe.
So it would be faster.
The X.
It's extremely faster. And of course a lot more storage capability in the Pros. A lot more screen and no Touch ID. And I agree. There are some people who would say, I want that Touch ID. I kind of like Touch ID. I don't have to worry about lighting conditions and holding it so and all that stuff. So
told my hand is blocking the camera every time.
Every time. I know it is.
Yeah. So that's why I kind of dig the slightly larger bezels on the iPads. They give you a place. They give you a safe zone to hold things. It's like a Polaroid picture. You're not going to get fingerprints all over
right.
it. And you're not going to cover up any parts of the interface.
Yeah, so you can make a case for it. So now iPads range in price from $329 to $1,700. You pick the iPad that's right for you. It's nice. It is very much like, very reminiscent of the iPod, latter days of the iPod where, you know, pick a price point, there'd be an iPod for you. And they were very different in capabilities. The iPod Touch is very different than the Shuffle, right?
The iPad Shuffle's terrible.
There's no iPad Shuffle, thank God. all right. Anything more to say about these new iPads? Except they're here. They're available. You can't get them quite yet. You can pre-order now. And what is it? It's a couple of weeks before you can get it delivered.
Leo, if you were going to buy one, which one would you buy?
I like the Mini. In fact, we already bought a Mini for review purposes for us. I don't feel like the Air is enough of a differentiator from the last year's iPad Pro to make it worth rushing out and getting. But I really like the Mini. The Mini is one I would use day in, day out. Yeah. So that's the one we ordered just so we could demonstrate it.
Yeah. Maybe this is also Apple's way of saying that our devices are so good, you will never want to fold them in half. Why would
you fold something that folds this in half? You can fold them, you just can't fold them back.
Yeah. Do they have...
You can fold them just unintentionally.
Do they have the smart cover for the Mini?
Yes.
Really?
Yep.
Have you used it?
Not the keyboard, but the smart cover.
Oh, the cover, but not the keyboard. Okay.
No, I asked about that, and they're like, well, we don't really have a tiny finger market yet for a smart keyboard that small. But there's, you know, third parties will probably, like Logitech has been making, I think.
Yeah, you know, people would complain. Who's this made for? These keys are too small. So, yeah, I think this is great. I'm glad. I mean, it's been a few years. We needed the return of the Mini is great news, and we needed the updates. And Apple's clearly listening to its audience because there must have been some discussions. Should we make it? Should we kill it? I'm glad they kept it.
They said there was like two people who liked the Minis. There were people who liked them because they used to be less expensive because they were smaller, and smaller things must be less expensive. But some people liked them just because they were portable.
Form factor,
and
yeah.
Apple has this problem sometimes where, like with the iPhone SE, it wasn't really clear to them, at least from the outside. It didn't look clear to them whether people actually wanted a smaller phone, not just a cheaper phone. But they realized with the iPad Mini that there were some people who wanted it cheaper, but the 9.7-inch is a better, cheaper product for those people. And there were people who just really wanted a digital field notes that syncs with iCloud or Dropbox, and you could sit there and draw with and do all this stuff with. And there's some awesome apps like Moleskine is doing some really, really cool agenda style apps. And there are just some amazing editing apps, like if you're taking photos, I'm going to go through them.
Perfect agenda
size. It's a really cool little device. Yeah.
If only I could get a fountain pen for the iPad Mini, then I'd be happy.
Hey, you're welcome to. Just, you know, you might need a blotter.
The press release, all new iPad Air and iPad Mini deliver dramatic power and capability. Maybe overselling it a little bit.
Astonishing.
Astonishing.
Well, yeah. Modern CPU. Another thing to consider is that maybe Apple is also thinking that if we're going to have a really cool streaming video service that's locked to Apple's, we're going to need to have it behooves us to make sure there's some awesome, awesome tiny tablets out there for people, and affordable tablets for people to carry around these movies and TV shows with.
Yeah. Then there's the new iMac. It's pretty, period. Freaking powerful. Period. That's Apple's verbiage. This is the same exact design with 8th generation Intel processors. Is that right?
Yep. It's completely unchanged, except for the 21.5-inch goes to 8th generation and with new Radeon cards and faster memory, and the 27 goes to 9th generation, because you can't just have a Coffee Lake. You got to have a Coffee Lake refresh now as well. And that also has new AMD up to Vega Pro and faster RAM.
The addition of the Vega, I would expect, I don't know, but I would expect is welcome, right? You've had a Vega.
I mean,
they put the Vegas in the MacBook Pros now.
They're not. Yeah, they're still mobile. They're not like the beefy ones that are in the iMac Pro.
Oh, this is this is the mobile.
I believe
Vega.
I have to double check, but like they're not the iMac Pro cards, and people still want NVIDIA, and that doesn't answer that. But you know, you have eGPUs, so these are better, much better than the ones that were in the previous generation.
So if I
are going to want whatever's not in the machine,
yes, of course,
yes, they want
absolutely
they want
right
beer to come out of the ports in the back. I don't know who asked for that.
So if I say let's get a 5K 27-inch iMac, which is really a nice machine, I could put a 8-core i9 in it, turbo boost up to 5 gigahertz. I could put up to 64 gigs. By the way, the iMac Pro also has additional RAM choices now up to all the way to 256 gig for $5,000. but we'll only put 64.
It's the Alex Lindsay plan, Leo. Your time is literally worth more than your money.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an easy purchase. Yeah.
Right. That's known as the first week in December. Gotta spend the rest of this budget money.
Spend the budget.
Before the end of the year, or else we lose it.
Let's put in the Vega, Radeon Pro Vega 48. I can't believe they're still selling these Fusion drives. Get rid of that.
Yeah.
Put in a terabyte SSD. Don't buy a Fusion drive, right?
Only 1 terabyte SSD? Yeah, never buy anything with a platter that's in an all-in-one that you'll have to drag to an Apple store if anything goes wrong with it. Yeah. Hang all your platters outside with a Thunderbolt cable.
I think a terabyte internal is sufficient, because I'm going to hang out some Thunderbolt 3. I have a very nice that new Blade from Otherworld Computing.
It's great as long as you've never had 2 terabytes internal. Once you've had 2 terabytes,
okay, you talked me into it. It's fantastic. So we got it up to iMac Pro prices, $5,249 maxed. If you max it out,
it ends exactly where the iMac Pro begins. Isn't with 8 cores and all this. And then if you want more than 8 cores, you got to go Pro.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
You know, the other cool thing is that they're still keeping the $1,100 basic 19-inch iMac on the price list. So it's there's still a less expensive buy-in. You don't necessarily have to have an 8-core processor if all you're doing is you just want an iMac for the family room, or you just want to buy an 8-pack to do video editing in a school lab.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, $1,000, and that's a pretty nice computer for $1,000.
That's competitive, yeah.
Yeah, 7th generation i5.
Including a top-of-the-line display, including this really nice build quality. Yeah.
And they still put spinning drives in. This has the cheapest one has a 5,400 RPM SATA drive.
That's okay.
You're right. For a school, yeah.
For a school, well, also for lower capacity, the SSDs are cheap only for lower capacities. Once you start to get into half a terabyte, a full terabyte, then it becomes, well, do I want to spend this extra $200 on a better case design? Do I want to spend that $200 on better cooling or more software or software subscriptions? I mean, I've got 8 terabytes in the NAS behind me. It's not SSD storage. It works fine. It's an okay thing. I wouldn't ding any machine at that price point for having spinning hardware.
Actually, given a $1,099 price point, a very competent machine, frankly, most people don't need more than 8 gigs, i5, a terabyte spinning drive. That's a very competent machine for a home computer. And actually, that's not a bad price. No. Really? I mean, I know you can get a Windows machine a decent Windows all-in-one is going to be $800. So it's not that much. I don't think that the Apple premium is so visible here.
Also, when you consider that it's like buying anything with an Apple logo on it, you got to factor in it's like getting sick in Canada. Like, you get premium health care built into the price.
Right.
You pay a little bit more in taxes, so to speak, but you still get better health care.
Yeah, this is a good family computer, 21-inch, or a good school computer, the 21-inch.
Yeah, and Apple said that they were seeing a lot of people, a lot of people buy it because they're doing one of those new desk implementations, and no one can just buy a computer anymore. They have to put all, the sculptures and the desks and the because of YouTube now.
Right.
And a lot of people just, for them,
it's a set piece.
The iconic.
They never even turn it on.
Absolutely. But with the family, they have fast family switching now too, fast account switching. So you can have 4 different accounts and one of the kids could walk up, you know, switch it to them, do their and they said one of the other big use cases now is continuity. Like, they're doing something on their phone and it just becomes too big a task for a phone. So they can walk over to the iMac in the living room, switch to their account, continuity it over and finish their report or answer that long email or something and then walk back away and someone else can do what they need to do on it. It's proving really popular in those, and also like front of houses and businesses, because they do these beautiful health club or nail salon or spa setup, and the iMac becomes like part of the implementation in that business because it does have that iconic design.
Yeah.
So Rennie, that beautiful shiny iMac in the background of your podcasting set,
is that on?
No, that's an iMac Pro. That's an iMac Pro.
It's not on. Well, now here's the deal. So we did talk about the range on the iPads. So we could start iMac at $1,099. If you max out an iMac Pro, I just did, with an 18-core Xeon with 256 gigs, this new memory choice, with a Radeon Pro Vega 64X with a 4-terabyte SSD, it's a mere $15,700. $15,000. You can get a car for less than that. But
you can't get a Tesla.
Can't get a Tesla.
Car is not going to render your Final Cut video, Leo. not well, at least.
Anyway, I'm glad to see this. You don't think a new Mac laptops this week because they have to be a redesign?
They just did. So they did almost all of them in October.
They refreshed
them. They did the new MacBook Pro as late as July. They did the other Macs. The only one they haven't done is the 12-inch MacBook. They gave it the new color scheme, but they didn't touch anything else about it. So that one, that one they traditionally updated in the spring. And the thing about Apple is anything that's not urgent or important or not a new design, they can just drop it a press release anytime.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. It doesn't really matter. It could be now. It could be in April. Doesn't matter.
Apparently, Mac Rumors noticed they have added some new storage options for the MacBook Pro with Touch Bar. New high-end 4-terabyte SSDs. Want a 4-terabyte SSD in your MacBook Pro? It'll cost you $2,800.
That was there already.
Was it?
There was reviews of the 4-terabyte. Maybe it's a different.
Oh, it's cheaper. No. That's what they're saying. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but now it's less expensive. They've cut $200 off the 2-terabyte, and they've cut $400 off of the 4-terabyte. I hardly noticed.
It's the price of the machine.
Yeah. If you can pay $2,800 or $3,200. What's the difference, really?
But I got to talk to a lot of the Alex
Well,
Lindsay
with that extra $400, you could buy a new iPad.
True. Now you can. That's a good point.
I love how Jim thinks.
Hey, what about the Mac Pro? When are we going to see that?
And they said this year, so that means like December 31st. Like
yeah, exactly.
11:58.
The same time as Google's new Stadia gaming system comes out, we'll get a Mac Pro.
I think that Apple is actually building an Apple store in the Aleutian Islands to have the absolute benefit of the latest time zone possible for that product.
It does shock me every time I go to the Apple store and I see the 2013 Mac Pro still for sale. It's
the loneliest Mac Pro.
It's like Ford still selling the Edsel. It's bizarre.
It's like the iPod Touch.
They haven't even really updated the website or anything. It's just sitting there. It's just I guess there are people buying it. I there must be, right?
There's no point in canceling something that's in stock that fills a hole. It's not that they're going to cancel it just out of spite. So
right. But they could update it. I guess they don't want to even do that.
Yeah, exactly. I think the whole, even the announcement, the way that these iMacs were announced with just, hey, guess what? There's new press releases that are sort of up there and people are getting phone calls as opposed to meetings. It's an indication a little bit about how frustrated Apple is with Intel's lateness on shipping product. When was Apple supposed to get the hardware they needed to make these updates? And how did it affect the development of these iMacs?
Well, so this chip, like the ninth generation one, these are literally fresh off the fab.
Right.
Just, I mean, like everyone always confuses Intel announcing a new generation with the actual chips for like all the range of chips coming out. And it takes months or a year sometimes to get the specific chips, especially the ones Apple uses.
Weren't they supposed to? Didn't they say they're going to be shipping these like middle of last year?
I think middle or fall.
Yeah. I thought that the story Intel is late with a new chip design to manufacturing is all these different news pieces tend to blob together in my brain. I tend to forget which one it is, but that's got to be an ongoing frustration with Apple that they can't really plan. If they plan something with an ARM processor, they know that something they're doing in house. If they have full control over that design and manufacturer, they know that if they're targeting October of 2019 for something, they're going to hit that target. If they've got a redesign for the MacBook, if they've got a redesign for the iMac that centers around a really, really new, like 16 core, whatever from Intel, they know that, okay, we're going to make sure that there's that we can clear away some of this old stuff to make way for the new stuff, but we have to have a plan B just in case we don't get the product that we need in time to put it into the product that we want to make.
So, I think I already know the answer to this, but the chat room's wondering, do any of the new iMacs have the T2 chip? I don't think so, right?
No, so they're not re-architected at all. They are literally just chip swaps. So Apple would have to re-architect them to put those in, and that's not in the cards yet.
Right.
It's incompatible. The T2 only works with SSDs. They haven't made it compatible with anything spinning, so anything that has a fusion drive is not going to have a T2 unless, as Renee says,
That's the giveaway. And are they putting APFS on the fusion drives or the spinning drives? No. Here's your answer.
We yield the floor to Renee.
They pulled it, and I didn't. I mean, I think they reintroduced it. Like, remember they warned people not to do it?
Yeah. Okay.
And I feel like they fixed that, but I don't like fusion drives, so I went pure SSD and negligently did not follow up.
Scooter X in chat room says yes, you can put APFS on the spinning drives. I don't know if they come with it on it though. You know, maybe that may be a choice you have to make. I don't know.
What a weird choice the Fusion Drive was to begin with. It really, Apple is usually the company that says that we're not really going to invest in a transitional thing. We're going to go all in on the next thing that we know is coming and that we're helping to develop. It's amazing that it's interesting to me that they decided to go with this kind of tricky sort of hybrid drive that has been tried before, but hasn't been thought of as a really next generation thing, as opposed to saying, well, look, if you need super, super fast, then you're going to spend extra for the SSD. If you're okay with the way that the speed you get now, you can get 5,400 drives, you can get 7,200 drives. We're not going to mess around with something that's sort of in between. It's not like this is Apple's, the 2019 version of the Twiggy drive. I mean, it works, but it creates all kinds of problems for maintenance. Creates all kinds of problems for getting data off of it if it fails. And they had this thing that was really, really good that was, again, if people wanted that extra speed, they could spend extra money for. It just seems atypical for Apple to have gone with this idea, which makes me think that maybe they had – this is a plan B sort of thing where they did think that they could see a few years in the future that we don't know what's going to happen to the SSD market in the next 3 years. We need to have an alternative to speed up these lower processor Macs to make them feel a lot faster than they are.
Oh, I did ask. I did ask about that because that was like the
– was.
Go ahead, Jim.
I think part of the problem with that is that you were looking at these Fusion drives coming in at a time when SSD was so expensive,
right,
that having people just come in and say, okay, I want to spend that extra money on SSD, which you can now because the cost has come down. But at the time, they were trying to work out how to have extra capacity in these machines and SSD at the same time, and you know, trying to mitigate the costs a bit for everybody.
I'm a little disappointed that APFS hasn't really, they haven't done much with APFS. There's a lot more they could do, including snapshots. They could have replaced their kooky little hyper backup.
I think they're fixing it every, I mean, I did ask about the Fusion drives in specific because it is an outlier now. And the answer I got was that it was an easy choice to go all SSD for laptops because laptops are carried around and the rate of failure is much higher. For Mac Mini and Mac Pro, those are essentially external devices anyway. You have to hang a monitor off of it. Hanging drives off of it is not a problem. But for the iMac, it was a lot of families buying it, a lot of first-time desktop customers buying it, and they wanted everything all-in-one. Like, they really bought into the all-in-one thing, but they wanted enough capacity to do, like, their home movies and their photos. And this was sort of the best solution they could do, was you can get the SSD if you want it, but it's expensive. We understand that. So to have the lower entry-level price model, Fusion was sort of the best of, I might argue the worst of both, but the best of both worlds option for that computer.
I correct myself. Apparently, they are starting to turn on the snapshot feature of APFS. When you do a system update, it's taking a snapshot. There's also, according to Scooter X, a snapshot taken every hour, which I didn't know about. You have to use Time Machine. I think replacing Time Machine with something that uses snapshots would be a very good move. So they are doing some stuff, but it's all kind of hidden away. Let's take a break because we just cleared the decks, as Apple has, getting all the new hardware out of the way so we can think about the big announcement on Monday. And we'll talk about that in just a little bit. First, I want to show you my ring. In fact, I always enjoy this. I haven't done it yet. How well did I sleep last night? Let me fire up the Aura app and check my Aura ring, which is the best sleep tracker I've ever had, and activity monitor. Aura ring tracks your sleep and activity 24/7 to build an accurate and insightful baseline of information so you can perform at your best. It has all sorts of stuff in it, an infrared optical pulse measurement with a 3D accelerometer, a gyroscope. It even measures your body temperature. Now, you ready? Show my app. Let's fire it up, and it's going to update from my ring. It automatically updates using Bluetooth LE. It's very fast. I can see my ring's charge state. Oh, my readiness is only 74. It says, if you feel tired, Leo, don't push yourself too hard today. I did get a nice sleep score, though, of 78. That's, for me, that's pretty good. I mean, most of you probably get an 80s and 90s, but I'm happy. I can see when I look at my sleep score that I was awake for an hour and 57 minutes. I remember that. I was looking at my phone. I had dreaming REM sleep for an hour and 10 minutes, light sleep for 5:23. But, this is a little disappointing. Only 39 minutes of deep sleep. That is a little bit disappointing. You want more than that because, frankly, that's what's clearing out those cobwebs. You could see over a period of days, weeks, and months, your sleep stages and how well you're doing. You can see what each sleep state tells you. For instance, my latency was very good. It took only 6 minutes to fall asleep. My restfulness, not great, and my efficiency pretty low. Resting heart rate, though, I'm pretty proud of that. 51 beats a minute. That's I'm practically dead. When you look at your readiness, you can see a lot of stuff. It's really amazing. This all comes from this little ring. And this is a beautiful, very lightweight. It's made out of titanium. You can wear it everywhere. I wear it even in the hot tub, in the shower, in the bath. But it's got these sensors right in here. And because it's on your finger, it's the most accurate heart rate monitor of all. The veins in your finger are actually right there on the surface. So it's a much easier way to measure heart rate. It also measures temperature. And I don't know of anything that measures temperature. Turns out your body temperature is a really strong indicator of overall health. If it starts to go up, you might be starting to get sick. And we're only talking a half a degree or less. I could see the trend of my body temperature is up a little bit. But it was down last week. It's very, very interesting to correlate this to what's going on with you and what you've been eating, drinking, and how your stress is and all of that. It's just fantastic. You get such great insights, guidance to about when it's time to go to bed, when a best bedtime is, sleep quality measurements, sleep stage tracking. The readiness thing is great too. They're using heart rate variability. It turns out the more variable your heart rate is, the better. So when your heart rate variability starts to go down, that means maybe you want to take a day off from your gym workout, things like that. Daily feedback gives you the information you need to better understand your body, improve your health, reach your goals. Now, this is all the good news. The bad news is these are super popular. And if you order now, you won't get it till May. I just want to warn you. But you can go to Oura Ring, OuraRing.com, and use the code TWIT, and you'll get $50 off your purchase. They have two shapes, Heritage or the one I have round. Rather Balance, which has a kind of a striking point. See, those are the balance rings. I think they're really pretty. In silver, black, stealth, or diamond, I have the stealth, which is kind of a matte black. It's aging kind of nicely, too. I really like how it's wearing. They even have a diamond version for an engagement ring. That's a little pricey at $9.99. But, maybe that'd be a great, wedding ring. Give one to your spouse. The battery lasts a full week. And it charges fast, so I never take my ring off. In fact, really, I just charge it when I'm getting a massage once a week. I'll put it on the charging stand, and that's plenty to keep it charged all week long. Uses Bluetooth LE. So the data, by the way, this is a Finnish company. The data is absolutely secure. The ring will store 6 weeks of data, so you don't have to pair it to the phone, but once every 6 weeks. You'll want to do it every day to get those insights daily, but you don't have to. There are apps, as I showed you, for iOS, but there's also an Android app. I like using iOS because it automatically imports workouts from Apple's health app. So my workouts are imported into it automatically. Track your sleep, make the most of your day, and act now because it's going to take a couple of months to get it. AuraRing.com. Use a code TWIT at checkout. $50 off your purchase. And they are making them faster and faster. So I think maybe saying May is just so you don't get too disappointed. But I've been hearing from people that they are getting them a little faster. OuraRing.com. Use the code TWIT at checkout, and you'll get $50 off your Oura ring. Everybody in the studio is now starting to wear these. They're really awesome. Really like it. Let's talk about Monday. Renee, you're flying out, right?
Yes, sir.
Jim, you could practically walk.
Walk over. I will be walking there.
You know, that's amazing. He's going to walk over. The Steve Jobs Theater. I'm jealous of you guys because I think there's going to be some big celebs there.
They're going to love meeting Jim. They're going to just rush over to him, all the Anistons and the Larsons. Oh, my God, it's the beard.
I don't care about them, only Jennifer Garner.
Oh, yeah, she's got a new show. Yep. Yeah.
Elektra, J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams doing it. Let me actually go through, because the New York Times published a good summary of all of the content from that Apple's produced. What I didn't know, and I learned from the New York Times summary, is that they already have a significant number of shows in the can. They've been working hard, blew through that $1 billion pretty quick, I would guess. And they already let me see what it says here, because I can't remember the exact number. Let's see, some number already in the can, and many.
There's five, I think, right?
Five in the can, and then many wrapping, a half dozen more on the verge of wrapping, according to several people familiar with the shows who are not authorized to speak publicly. And they're going to do even more next year. So here's a rundown of what we know from the New York Times. This is the one that everybody's saying is going to be the flagship. This is this Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston project. Steve Carell is in it from The Office. Billy Crudup, Mark Duplass. It is based on the cutthroat world of
stars.
Yeah, it's all stars. Cutthroat world of morning TV. Weird that the showrunner is Hillary Clinton's former press secretary, Jay Carson. That worries me just a little bit. And a supervising producer of House of Cards. Oh, I'm sorry. They were replaced. There was a little drama, according to the Times. They were replaced by the co-creator of Bates Motel, Carrie Aaron. And Brian Stelter, who is CNN's media guy, is the consultant on this. And they're almost done with season one. They've committed to two seasons. In fact, Apple committed before seeing a script. So, interesting. Amazing Stories, the reboot of the Steven Spielberg series from the duo behind the ABC series Once Upon a Time. Actually, that was also a show that the showrunner was replaced because, according to the Times, the original producer's vision was too dark for almost everyone involved, including Mr. Spielberg. Also expected to wrap soon. Octavia Spencer has been Instagramming pictures of Are You Sleeping? It's a drama based on a crime novel. And that shoot finished late last year. A sci-fi series called For All Mankind from the producer of Outlander and Battlestar Galactica, Ronald D. Moore.
That's the one about if the space race never ended, right? Where they're still competing aggressively for space dominance. Yeah. Sounds awesome.
That's also in the can. Jason Momoa, who's hot today because of Aquaman, will keep his clothes on and stay out of the water in a fantasy epic called Sea, which the plot's a little weird. What would happen to humanity if everyone went blind?
If he keeps his clothes on, the whole audience thing is going to fail, Leo. He's like an
Apple
Instagram
will
model.
Not let him take his clothes off. Apple apparently is being quite prudish in these.
But his abs. I mean, all they want is a little bit of abs. You've got to give people the abs.
Give them the abs.
Yeah. I'll show mine.
Well, Jim, the servers would just melt at that point.
I'd show mine, but I don't think the screen is wide enough.
We just all get those Sylvester Stallone shirts, and then we'll be fine.
Yeah, there you go. M. Night Shyamalan has a new story. It's secret. Filming is over, but we don't know what it is. Little America from I love this because it's Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon, the authors of The Big Sick. That should be fun. Produced by Lee Eisenberger, who's a producer of The Office. The folks who did it, It's Always Sunny, Rob and Charlie are back. They're going to do a sitcom. That was a pretty dark show, pretty weird show. I imagine Apple will be keeping an eye on that one. A cartoon musical from the creator of Bob's Burgers, Central Park. Josh Gad of Frozen will be in that. Home. Is a unscripted, i.e. documentary, from the maker of Scotty and the Secret History of Hollywood and Studio 54, will take viewers behind the lavish homes owned by non-celebrities.
It's Robin Leach.
Yeah, inside the lifestyles of the rich and infamous.
And if there's ever been a better moment in world in American culture highlight people who have millions and millions of dollars, or is this San Francisco where here's my $8 million abode? There's me and my wife are in bunk beds.
Actually, you know, Billions and Succession, which are two HBO shows, actually one's Showtime, the other's HBO, about the super super rich, were both quite popular. People do like seeing a little peeking into that world, and then finally. an Emily Dickinson comedy, a new spin on the reclusive poet of Amherst. They got your letter. Okay. So some winners, some losers in this one. The Times says they've long ago spent their billion and they're well into their second billion.
Which is a trickle compared to Netflix and Amazon. Yeah.
Netflix is up to eight, I think, last year.
Yeah.
It's still a really, really laudable risk that they're taking because, God, they can when they're designing a phone, when they're designing an iPad or a watch, they've got other things in the marketplace that they can really compare it to say, here's what people are buying and here are the reasons why people are buying it. You can make something that is creative, that has all the right creative people behind it, and boom, it just sinks without a trace, and you will never know the reason why. So I do think that this does show a certain amount of courage on Apple's part to realize that they're going to sink a lot of money into huge names and huge talent and huge budgets, and it could just go away like the last Al Pacino movie did.
Hearing Andy say that, I suddenly want an Aaron Sorkin show that goes behind the scenes of decisions to remove headphone jacks from all the major companies, like the meetings in between the keynotes.
We did leave out shows that haven't yet begun production, including an Oprah project. You mentioned Jennifer Garner. There's a project with her. That's going to be J.J. Abrams produced. Actually, J.J. has two Apple series in the works, one with Jennifer Garden and one with the singer-songwriter Sarah Bareilles.
And they did Alias together, so that'll be cool.
Yeah. Oprah Winfrey, Damien Chazelle, the director of La La Land and First Man, Chris Evans. So some real all-star talent, although there's, you know, been some concern, we've mentioned it before, that Apple may be a little bit prudish.
That's the Disney thing right now too. Like they're all worried that Fox is going to lose its edge because it's moving into the Disney empire. Yeah. And it's fine to have Disney's as long as you also have Fox's. It's when they all start to conglomerate around the same idea that we lose out on.
Apple was sensitive to, this is the New York Times article, Apple was sensitive to a reputation it earned early on as a home for uplifting programming with little or no room for the gritty anti-hero fare that has defined many critically acclaimed series over the last two decades, from Sopranos onward. Executives at the company bristled when they discovered there would be scenes involving crucifixes in Shyamalan's new thriller. This was the Wall Street Journal story we talked about last fall. But Apple ultimately, and this I hadn't heard, allowed the crucifixes to remain. So there's hope. Apple, of course, had nothing to say about this article.
God, I want to know about the context behind that.
Yeah. Oh, leave the crucifixes.
Well, it's either on the one hand, it could be just God swallowing stupidity of whatever, or it could just be, you know, maybe you don't want someone to be clubbed over the head and killed with a religious icon. Right. Maybe
it's tough because Hollywood does, and HBO certainly, and Showtime let them get pretty darn edgy. And those shows have developed an audience.
Sometimes it's appropriate. Like I still, you know, the series premiere of The Shield ends with a cop being shot right in the face by one of his fellow cops, and that's one that is what feeds the entire seven seasons of the series tension and drama.
Right.
And so we'll see. The other thing to keep in mind is that it doesn't even necessarily matter so much if every one of these series is a hit or is a flop. The whole point is to get people to sign up or to get behind this service. And if 2 years from now they've got enough forward momentum with subscriptions that they can simply say, here's a playwright that we really, really like, was a really great idea for a comedy or a drama. No one's heard of her, but we're gonna greenlight her series. At this point, you really do need to have things on the shelf with recognizable logos, or else people are not going to come into your store.
Do we really have any idea what Apple's going to do, though? I mean,
for TV or for general.
What are they going to do with this? Are they going to charge for it? Are they going to give it away? Is it going to come with an Apple device?
Some of it sounds like it's going to be free. Some of it sounds like it's going to be premium. And it's going to, because they don't have the back catalog the way Netflix does or a way like a Disney's going to have or a lot of the other services are going to have, they're going to do sort of what Amazon does and let you bundle other, subscribe to other services through them, except for Netflix, because Reed Hastings
Netflix has already said no. Yeah, Netflix has already said no. There's not a lot of love lost.
Which you can do when you're Netflix. Well, yeah. He was really interesting because he said he loved Apple, he loved working with them, but he wants people to only experience Netflix through Netflix's apps. And what Apple's already done with the TV app is for a lot of services, including Amazon Prime, you can, the TV app will show you what you watch, the most recent episode for it, things it thinks you're interested in right there. So you go to one place and you see all the stuff you are watching and the stuff you might be interested in. And Netflix is like, nope, don't want to go through that. You want to watch Netflix? You come to Netflix.
It's not always the best experience because I'll see, okay, the next, you know, the Showtime show we're watching and it'll launch. If I click it in the Apple TV app, but yeah, I mean, it's behind the scenes launching the Showtime app, and but it immediately starts that show playing. If I don't want to start there, if I want to go back, I have to exit out of the show and dig. It's not a great experience.
Yeah, there's no clear hierarchy because it can't tell if you want to go back to the TV app or back to the
It just launches what it thinks is next. And if it's wrong, that's not right. Yeah.
But that is strange because my Android TV devices have that behavior with Netflix. It's there's a the, my home page is here's the YouTube channel, here's the Hulu channel, here's frequent apps, and on each one of the individual tiers of here's your Hulu tier, here's your Netflix tier. It's here's what you were just watching. You want to dive back into it? Here's some other things that is on Netflix that for God knows what reason has been placed inside this this preview pane. So there might be more going on than that, though.
Well, it you can show the page, like that's fine. They just don't want it commingled. And it's like, you know, Apple won't let like phone carriers show the iPhone with any other phone. It's what happens when you're.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I honestly would like to have Apple redesign Netflix app. It's crap. It's the most user hostile experience ever. I find myself trying quickly to jump from program to program so that the trailer doesn't launch.
Yes.
Because all the trailers autoplay.
It is native, and but they don't. So they have a really good team, a really smart team. The director on Twitter talks about it sometimes. It's a complete Apple app, unlike the OpenGL apps that Google, like YouTube and Prime have foisted on us. But they don't allow you to choose to turn that kind of stuff off, which is frustrating.
Well, and on any platform. It's the same on every platform, and it's terrible.
Leo, I'm so glad. Like when Jason said this, when you said this, it makes me feel less insane because I don't know what it is about the way that my brain is wired up, but I do feel that tension that I've got to. I can't stop long enough to read the description because it's going to start playing audio. It is absolutely true that I always mute the sound whenever I go to the Netflix app because otherwise, for some reason, the autoplay of sound interrupts my ability to really digest what's going on there. And if I could turn that off, I would, and it annoys the hell out of me.
Well, they keep changing poster art, so I keep thinking there's new stuff there that's not new. Right. They just change the poster every 3 days.
And good luck finding what you just were watching last night.
Like, there's no object permanence. Like, it's like one thing one day, another thing another day. I can't tell what
start.
It is.
Always start with what you just watched.
Yeah.
You know, you want episode two, it should be right at the top there. It's randomly distributed throughout. It's a terrible UI. Clearly, they're good at what they do. It's clearly intentional. And it's my contention that they don't want you to think. They want you to just watch, just play, watch everything.
It's like a slot machine, video slot machine. Yep. To keep them playing. Yep. Although, see, there's so much about this business that's changed in the last 5 years. The psychological point of contact, the psychological interface, the idea that Apple wants you not to think that you're watching Hulu, you're watching YouTube, you're watching Netflix. They want you to think that you're watching Apple TV. And there are lots of content providers, but your point of contact is Apple computers, Apple Inc., as opposed to Netflix and chill. It's like, no, you're not going to go into Netflix and spend 3 hours looking at Netflix content. Your loyalty is not to Netflix. Your point of contact for all this is going to be Apple. So I think that's one of the reasons why we see so many companies building all these little ecospheres like Disney, making sure that it's no longer good enough for us to have the ability to sell Disney content everywhere and making sure that everybody everywhere can see it. We want to make sure that people are, not only is it going to be making money for us exclusively, not only is it going to be a signature for our own subscription service, but we want you to be a Disney watcher. We don't want you watching Disney on Netflix, Disney on this other channel, Disney on streaming, Disney on DVR. We want you to be a Disney customer, not a Disney watcher.
Yeah, and it's not really consumer friendly because I often exit the TV interface on the Apple TV because I want to see what's on Showtime. And they, there's
it's
no
a beautiful
easy
dream,
way to
it's
do
just
that.
Not realized.
Yeah. Apparently, Apple is this week scrambling to get everything set up for Monday. Mark Gurman writing in Bloomberg, actually, this is from last week. Apple courts HBO and Showtime for service to challenge Netflix. Sounds like they hadn't made the deal by last week. But apparently, most of the content in the initial launch of the service will be coming from these third parties, not from Apple itself, but HBO, Showtime, and Starz. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you just have here's five shows you can watch.
Just to get back for a quick second about some of these other partners in the video service. Apple doesn't like to share with those people either. They don't like to share customer information. And Andy was saying Disney wants you to be a customer of Disney. Well, that's absolutely true, but you would think that Disney would want to go out and have its content in as many places as possible, but they want that information. They want to know what's going on. And Apple typically will not give that information out. So whether it's, new subscriptions or whether it's Netflix or whoever. So that's something to consider, too.
Yeah. That's an excellent point, and it works both ways too. One of the things that makes Amazon so troubling as an industry titan is that they are a marketplace for products, but they also have their own branded products. So as a result, they get to watch you, a manufacturer of batteries and cables, how you sell your stuff. They get to see how people are buying your stuff. They get to see what did they look at before they bought your stuff. And based on my customer profile, how to predict that I'm going to be buying that stuff myself. So therefore, they don't have to do a whole lot of marketing research. They get to look at the entire marketplace before they decide what to purchase and what to manufacture and how to price it. Apple can put themselves in the exact same situation where if your point of contact is Apple, they get to see that, Andy, and the moment that a new episode of Mrs. Maisel came on, he didn't even wait. He just went and saw it right away. They get to see the demographics of people and what the demographics of their customers, what they're watching. Did they abort after 10 minutes or did they immediately go into like 3 hours worth of binge watching on this show? And that can inform their decision to produce new content for their own exclusive content channel. So there's a lot of back and forth in this. There's a lot of variables in this calculus and all of it basically puts Apple in a really, really good position to become a good force the next 3 or 4 years. I don't know how they're – honestly, on Monday, I have no idea how they're going to pitch this. I have no idea how they're going to sell it. I have no idea whether they're going to pitch this as this is the greatest union of Apple hardware, software, and services, or whether they're simply going to say we are Hollywood. We are a provider of we have always been at the intersection of liberal arts and science, and this is the perfect point of content for us. But it's clear that Apple is not just dallying around with this isn't just like Apple trying to say, hey, we've come up with this new standard for iTunes so that if you want to have like album liner notes, here's a way to get album liner notes. This is a really big thing, as big as Apple Health.
I figured it out. They made deals with all the agents who are now doing all the packaging for all the celebrities. So they bypassed the entire industry. And they're just the thing that's curious to me, though, is not just like we're going to have the news service and we've talked about that. But there's still rumors that they're going to do the gaming service as well. And Google just now announced their gaming service. So what could Apple's be? Because I have a hard time thinking like Fortnite would just wrap themselves into a subscription package, or Pokemon Go or Clash of Clans, any of the games that are literally making billions a year. So what But are there games that are good and fun that wouldn't mind giving up IAPs and other sorts of monetization options because they never really took off, but would still in some be compelling enough that someone would want to subscribe to Apple just for constant access to as many of them as they want?
That's a great point.
So draw us a picture of what we're going to see on Monday. Are they going to start with news and then the celebrities? You know, you got to save the best for last. Who will be there? What's it going to look like?
It's going to be Academy Awards. Jennifer Aniston's going to walk out to introduce the first product.
I think that would be great, right? There should be a lot of star power on stage, right?
You think it's going to be a red carpet and a lot of... You think that some of these people actually had outfits made for this?
Tim, who are you wearing? Vera Wang. Oh, of course. Yeah.
I'm not interested really in the star power. We all know that Apple can bring star power if they want to, whether it's music or Hollywood or whatever. I mean, that's not really of a whole lot of interest. To me, it's about the details of the service and where Apple is going, you know, fundamentally where they consider themselves to be a part of this whole streaming industry now. That's what I'm most interested in. And I'm interested to see how they're going to market it and where the pricing and all of that comes. And finally, I guess, Jennifer Garner.
See, I honestly think that Apple will save that for a briefing, not Jennifer Garner, the first part, and we'll focus on the Jennifer Garner. I think this is going to be more like the Oscars than it is a press briefing, but it's, you know,
no Michael Bay. Apple, you've seen the warning signs. You know what's going to happen if you have Michael Bay there, so just don't do it.
Jim, I love you. I just want to ask you, do you have like the number of a bail bondsman ready to go? Just on the outside.
I think Jennifer Garner is going to give Jim a big hug.
She's Elektra. She'll fine.
Yeah. I given Apple's aspirations, I honestly think they're going to play this up. This is going to be more Hollywood than it's going to be Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I think so. I'm keen to see how they decide to spend that first 5 minutes where before they start bringing on the stars, before they start showing previews of these shows that we've been hearing about, but we haven't even seen so much as a God. How rare is it that you haven't even seen like a photo from the set leaked out somewhere on Instagram somewhere? But before they get into all that sort of stuff, they're going to have the world media attention. How are they going to use that first 5 minutes? What is it about Apple that they're going to want to promote that they might not have gotten any attention for beforehand? Or are they going to use that time to on a humanitarian sort of aid, excuse me, a humanitarian sort of purpose, basically to say that, hey, we're still, we're concerned about these events that have been taking place and we're monitoring this sort of stuff. It's going to be one hell of an event. I don't always watch a live feed of something, but this is something where I really want to see not just the news that comes later. I don't just want to interview and talk to people and get briefed a couple days later. I really want to see every detail of how Apple presents this and how Apple uses this time, I think is going to show us something about this company in 2019.
There was, I remember event, there were a few, sorry, Jim, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Randy.
No, I was just going to say that at the watch event, they had PR there that were like, they had people from the fashion world there. And I remember a few people who looked like, no joke, straight out of the Fifth Element, like with these giant hairdos and amazing costumes. And they were like, oh, this feels like a fashion event, doesn't it? It really feels like Apple gets fashion. And that's exactly what they wanted. And they were the people hovering over the gold watch table, by the way.
Yeah.
And it had that vibe. And it sounds like they're going to have a lot of entertainment media there and, you know, news media, that kind of stuff.
But Angela Arendt left. Apple stopped selling the edition.
But not that kind of fashion. This is not like the watch thing. This is like the whole internet media generation, like yeet. You know, someone's going to yell yeet and just everyone's going to go.
It is a case, I think, that when you're in a plateauing market where it's hard to get differentiators from a technological perspective, the only way to get people back in the market is, you know, the categories that do well are fashion, where you have a update, a refresh every season, or cars where every year there's a new car. There's no technological change, frankly, from year to year, but people buy the fins. And I think Apple's in its fin stage. So I suspect they'll really push the flash. They'll push the fashion.
Will they passive-aggressively make any reference to the Spotify stuff?
We'll get to Spotify in a second. That's interesting. I also thought it was interesting
that, is a media thing.
That Andy mentioned...
Why you gotta be like that, Rennie?
Andy mentioned the idea of being politically aware. And that may happen as well, because remember, it's hard to get the Oprahs of the world to come to your stage in Cupertino. You can't offer... What are you going to offer Oprah? Money? You can't offer her money. But if you're doing it in a good cause, you're much more likely to get these celebrities to show up. They're not there to line Apple's pockets. They've already lined their pockets. But if it's for a good cause, maybe it's a little easier to get them. So I wouldn't be surprised to see something like that, Andy, actually. But more... Unfortunately, more about getting celebrities to show up than anything else.
Well, this is an event the likes of which Apple has never thrown before.
Right.
They've never done it. They've had some huge names. If anybody asks me, hey, who are the greatest live acts you've ever seen, I can give them a list that will make them super envious. I just won't tell them that I know I didn't go to a
Apple
concert.
Events.
these were the other. And one more thing, by the way, here's U2. Like, hey, yeah.
But how did Apple get U2 with Project Red? Right, but they really went all out supporting Bono's AIDS efforts.
But what I was going to get at is that was, hey, here is a tech event where we're going to be talking about and promoting our technology. They've had events where it's been mostly about the software. They have never had an event that is 100% a cultural event.
Right.
This is all about stuff that we're not just bringing up musicians and movie makers and book writers whose work we are selling in our store. We are producers. We made the selection. We sought out these people. This is a group of people that we feel that will represent, who's going to be doing the sort of work that we want to present and we want to put our associate our names with. So this is going to be an event the likes of which we have never seen from Apple ever.
Historically, it's been an ungainly relationship between Silicon Valley and Hollywood. And
they're so angry about the music. They're just so angry about the music, Leo.
Yeah. and Apple's already, they're competing with the likes of HBO and Showtime and Starz. And even Amazon has more of a kind of Hollywood glitter.
Disney soon.
Disney.
DC.
Yeah.
There's so many.
Yep. So they're the only really pure Silicon Valley play in this space. Go ahead.
That's part of the problem. I mean, look at this as from a consumer standpoint. By the way, Leo, I get a new haircut for you.
I like it, by the way. I noticed it. Yeah. It almost has a notch, though. I just careful there.
If you turn me upside down, I could be Jim. Turn me upside down.
If you look at this from a consumer standpoint, we have Hulu and we have Netflix and we have Amazon that are already entrenched and that have great programming that we're watching. So how is Apple going to fit into all of this? I don't know if bringing Starz out is going to be enough, but looking at the roster of shows that they have, Leo, you said it. There's depending on what your likes are. There's some sci-fi, there's some thrillers, there's, a little bit in there for everybody, comedy. There's a few shows in there that I'm certainly interested in watching, but it's a matter of fitting that in. And I think that's where the key is going to come from this event. It's going to be how Apple prices it. Do they, Apple Music, they gave away for 3 months. Are they going to give away the video service for 3 months for people to try? Are they going to combine pricing? That if the pricing is, for Apple Music and the video service is $5 extra a month, let's say, somebody might say, well, yeah, it's only $5 a month. I can add that on to what I already have. But if it's an extra 15, they might say, I've already got Netflix and Hulu. I'm fine. I don't need that.
Yeah. And so those are the details. Apple's history has not been good in this regard. I mean, the two shows Apple's already done haven't been great. Carpool Karaoke was okay, and Planet of the Apps was god awful.
We do not speak of this time.
And Apple's going to get a real lesson in Hollywood economics, because if you only have five shows, chances are only one of them is going to be a hit at best. And it's challenging.
Well, I think that Apple's already learned that lesson from those two shows in particular, especially Planet of the Apps, which was just awful.
Yeah.
I think Apple threw that out to see, you know, what was going to happen. They may have been surprised or maybe not with the response from it. But looking at all of the people that they got in to produce and write and star in these shows, it seems to me that they've learned a very big lesson. And by watching what other people have done, like Netflix. I mean, Netflix is going to be, I believe I read last week that Netflix is going to be in the double-digit billions in investing in original content this year.
That's right.
So, I mean, that Apple's not there yet. And it would be silly for Apple to go out and spend double-digit billions in TV programming before they launch these first shows to see, okay, what's popular with our crowd and what's not popular. And then they move on from there. But eventually they will be. They'll probably outspend the rest of them.
Yeah, they also have this huge, huge safety cushion of money behind them, so they can keep on. Apple has the ability to absolutely write its own destiny. They don't have to make this a success right out the door. All they have to do is have maybe not even necessarily a smash hit, but the kind of shows that people like enough that they're going to want to blog about it. The kind of stuff that the New York Times is going to want to say this is a really, really good stuff. More importantly, if they can get some awards in the next couple of years, if they get an Oscar 2 years or 3 years from now, that is all they need to basically make sure this is an ongoing concern. And as far as Planet of the Apps goes and Carpool Karaoke, I don't necessarily even see them as failures. They would be failures if we knew that Apple had great hopes for them as enduring signature moneymakers. I get the feeling that they believed in those shows, they wanted to make those shows, but the point of those shows was we know we're going to be launching this huge thing in a couple of years, let's get a couple of shows out so that we are that part of the business has some stuff to work on, and we'll learn from these relatively low risk shows how the giant corporation of Apple will interface with producers of individual shows and the talent that works on their shows. So I don't think it was necessarily a failure.
It was a beta. It does have the risk of damaging the brand.
It was the rocker phone of content.
And in fact, Apple will be chasing Oscars. Gurman reported this week that Apple has hired Oscar Chasers, a team of people with awards strategy experience to go after Emmys and go after Oscars. It's kind of ironic that one of their producer Steven Spielberg has come out saying streaming services shouldn't be eligible for the Oscars.
Awkward.
Maybe they
didn't realize that was such a big game. I saw the documentary on it, and wow, is that not at all what I thought the Oscars were like?
Yeah.
Oscar night in Canada. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. We have the Junos, Leo. They count. According to Ryan Reynolds, they count.
It really says something about their interest in this platform that they are hiring these sort of people, because I am one of those people who starts like making their little Oscar like betting slips. I'm so non-sports. I don't even know, like, people are making their what is
brackets.
God, what is brackets? Thank you very much. I don't know. I start thinking
of, you have an Oscar bracket.
This could be 800 news a year. And the amount of money that gets spent to essentially buy an award and it's not like the Golden Globes, where you can pretty much influence the 100 people who vote for this. We're talking about, you really do have to have a political campaign that starts months and go down
to LA, towards the end of the year, and there are billboards and there's for your consideration and there's all of this. They send out a lot of stuff. There is a huge, in fact, that's what Netflix did to get Roma, all of its nominations and its three Oscar wins. They spent a lot of money on a person to do this. Now, here's the final question before we move on. Is this Apple chasing the wrong era? Is this Apple trying to emulate old Hollywood, just as old Hollywood is fading away? Look at YouTube. Look at this YouTube stars. Look at the revenue YouTube's generating.
Look at the controversy, though, that Apple's going to want no part
of. True, but it has nothing to do with modern entertainment. And I don't know if Jennifer Aniston is going to draw an audience under 40. Or even Jennifer Garner.
Does Apple really want to wake up with their biggest star talking about what he did or not do with his cash?
I love Jennifer Garner. But we're all a little bit older here. I don't know if this, what Apple's creating, is going to appeal to the new generation of consumers.
Give them Game of Thrones, they'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, that's I think YouTube might even show why this is a great idea, because this isn't the 70s or the 80s anymore, where you had to make you get a hit show like Friends by making something that a great number of people like. You can have now a hit by making a show that a lower number of people absolutely love, like Mrs. Maisel, or like one of my favorite shows the past 10 years, One Day at a Time, which I'm a little bit heartbroken they don't get another series. And is this something that everybody is talking about? No, but it does what it needs to do for Netflix, which is that it brings in a demographic of people that maybe they're not getting with their other programming. And it also means that this is getting a lot of prestige talk about it. People are saying it really is a magnificent show. It almost, I love it so much that I have to almost restrain my praise for it, because I don't want to sound quite so silly. It almost transcends what you think a sitcom should be. And that's really all a streaming show has to do. It has to find its niche. It has to be something that's a little bit apart from everybody else. And just like making a smaller iPad, just like making a $329 iPad, just like making a $1,000 iPad, you need to make sure that if there's somebody there with attention to that's willing to be spent, that there's a product for that person. So long as they fit all of those little holes, I think they're going to do it. They're never going to get a Paul whatever, the jerk YouTuber that keeps getting in trouble every couple of months.
Jake Paul and Logan Paul.
Thank you. They bisected like any good amoeba. But they're never going to get 12-year-olds that are as passionate about an Apple branded series as someone who is just doing stuff off the top of their head. They're going to find that kind of fandom. Nor do they have to. They're Apple, and part of their brand is making sure that we're not just an open channel for anybody to post anything on. At some point, somebody had to be convinced that this was a good idea before we decided to put this as part of our package.
Well, there's also kind of an unknown. Eddie Q has said Apple is unlikely to seek exclusive rights for sports. But I think it was actually Alex Lindsay who brought this up a couple of weeks ago. He's of the opinion, and I'm increasingly agreeing with him, that the major networks' rights to the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, those are about to expire in the next couple of years. And he says, and I think he's absolutely right, it's going to be the big digital giants like Amazon that are going to outbid the networks.
Apple's not making a phone, Leo. That's what they said. And then the iPhone. Can you imagine that Eddie not wanting to do sports? The man almost misses WWDC for the Warriors game every year.
And honestly, if you have a subscription service and it's the only place you can watch the NFL, it's over. Game over, man.
Mm. Would people stand for it, though? Like, is every single sports fan going to be willing to pay? Are they going to feel like it's sort of a dereliction of the relationship between the fans and the sport to say that, no, you no longer get this free over the air. You no longer get a certain number of shows over the air. We've exclusively sold the NFL. We've exclusively sold the Super Bowl, for God's sake, to a streaming service as a pay-per-view.
That's going to happen. Yeah. May not happen next year.
I don't know.
It's going to happen.
I don't know.
And because the budgets of these companies just too huge. And if Apple, for instance, bought that franchise, and they certainly can afford to, that's the one last thing, at least in America, that we all gather to watch. Well, I'm sure it's true in the rest of the world. It's just not football.
We watch football.
Yeah, or hockey.
Curling.
But that's the one. There is, you can't think of any, it's a lot of otherwise. It's a lot of slices of niches, like One Day at a Time. But sports is one thing that cuts across all boundaries.
You just made me think of something for the very, very first time. We talk about how Apple is, they promote themselves as, and to a great degree, they actually are very, very interested in being a positive force in society. what a great opportunity they would be to say, guess what? We've bought exclusive rights to WNBA. And so we are going to promote it as though we care about this, as though we see this as a point of pride for us. And so you are going to be able to watch WNBA games. And also, we're going to put enough money into the league that these people these stars, these wonderful athletes, will actually be paid like professional athletes and not like Walmart managers. This would be, I would love to see them to be essentially ESPN2 only treating all these sports extremely seriously. That would get my attention really quick.
Great article today in sports on Sports Illustrated SI.com about Apple's sports surveillance room. This is basically a war room. It's what informs the sports portion of Apple TV, which right now just tells you what you can watch on the major networks. But when you're doing something this big and you're putting this much money into it, it could indicate, despite Q's denial, a real interest in that kind of thing. And honestly, if you want to make a subscription service succeed, even if you just got college football, you know, maybe you don't have to have the big guys, but
college football's huge,
right?
Yeah, there's too much money in the NCAA is so money focused that I don't think that they would want any offer from Apple. I think that's why I think that their big opportunity is in the sports that haven't been super monetized yet. The sports that don't have an Electronic Arts game yet.
It's the XFL. They all want the XFL.
The NCAA's contract was for $8.8 billion with CBS and Turner. It goes to 2020 from 2025 to 2032. So the NCAA isn't going to be available for a while. But $8.8 billion is chump change to Apple. They could double that. They could double that offer.
How much? What could they buy with $8 billion if they on more than one thing? Could they?
It's sitting in a CD in the First National Bank. They might as well spend it.
Well, it's seed money. Once again, the definition of power in a company is the ability to call its own shots, to basically decide its own future. And so long as they've got all that money that's making money for them, I think $8 billion is way more than chump change. I would take one tenth of that in cash if they offered it.
Yeah, can I suggest that they pay us half of that for a second exclusive edition of Mac Break Weekly every week where we tell them what's wrong and how they can fix it?
There you go. Yes. I'll do it for $1 billion.
Can I say that amount of money? I would say whatever the hell Apple wants me to say. I've never said I can't be
actually
bought. I just said for $1 billion.
I understated the amount. And it's not, by the way, for all of the NCAA. It's just for the tournament. $19.6 billion total contract. It's not.
Apple could still double that.
It's not.
It's pretty nice when you claim that you've got a moral, that it's a moral point for you not to pay your athletes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Athletes are free. Yeah. Let's take a break. There is a lot more to talk about. Spotify for sure. And Google announced something today. Maybe we could talk about how that impacts Apple. It's all coming up next with Mac Break Weekly from The Loop. loopinsight.com. Jim Dalrymple is here. Andy Iannacco from Boston Public Radio and from imore.com. The lovely and talented Renee Ritchie. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use invoicing software that turns out to be a full accounting system. You just don't even need to know about it. It's an all-in-one cloud accounting solution. If you're a freelancer or a small business, you'll love it because you're doing your accounting just in the process of sending out those invoices. Spend more time doing the work you love and less time on paperwork with FreshBooks. I started using FreshBooks because I hated sending out invoices. I hated it. FreshBooks makes it easy to send professional-looking invoices. And as soon as you sign up for FreshBooks, you can now take online payments, which means it's easier for your clients to pay you, which means that on average, FreshBooks users get paid twice as fast. You got to love that. You can also put all the expenses in your invoice right from your FreshBooks app on your phone. Just take a picture. Boom, it's in there. You can even have FreshBooks call your bank automatically and download all your expenses. So now you've got your accounts receivable. You've got your income from all those invoices that are getting paid. You've got your expenses. You're doing your books without even doing anything. FreshBooks is awesome. Awesome. For anybody who wants to keep track of how much they're making. In fact, it was the first time I ever really knew whether I was making a profit. It used to be I had to wait till tax time. But April 15th, I'd know. But now with FreshBooks right there on the dashboard, you'll know at any given moment. Automatically create recurring invoices, even saves you more time. Do you bill for hours? You can log every hour with time tracking, both on the app or in the website. And you can even have different rates for different projects. Easy to understand reports, easily capture expenses, and categorize them automatically. That makes tax time a breeze. You can create all those accounting reports that your accountant wants. You don't even have to know anything about it. Just push a button and there it is. I am a big fan of FreshBooks, and it works with all the apps you're already using, including, say, Gusto, G Suite, Funbox, Stripe, Bench, and on and on and on. And it's always improving because it's a web app. It's always improving. I'll tell you, once you start using FreshBooks, you will get what I'm saying, and you'll never want to leave. Try it for 30 days, absolutely free. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. Don't wait another day. Boost productivity with your team and try FreshBooks free for the next 30 days at FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. Just put MacBreak Weekly in the How Did You Hear About Us field there to get your 30 free days. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. Offer code is MacBreak Weekly for 30 days free of the best darn invoicing and accounting system you ever saw. FreshBooks. I've always loved FreshBooks. Saved my life many moons ago, and they continue to be a great support to our show. So thank you, FreshBooks. Spotify. It's gone back and forth, back and forth. Did we show the Spotify website? I can't remember last week. Time to Play Fair.
I don't think so.
No, I talked about it on other shows. Spotify, by the way, changed it really quickly after they put it up there. And Jim is our music lover. Are you a Spotify user, Jim?
I have been a Spotify user, yeah. But Apple Music has really fixed the way that it does a lot of recommending and integration, although I did get upset over the weekend because it replaced some of my songs with
again?
Live versions. Yeah. So that and these were playlists that I had built. They were there for a long time, and all of a sudden I was playing the playlist, and there was a live version of a song that, when I picked the studio version, and the studio version had been there for, a year or more. So that was frustrating, but.
Well, Spotify, in its website, timetoplayfair.com, would aver that the reason that you switched is because of anti-competitive moves by Apple. For instance,
bundling,
charging more. Apple, of course, takes 30% out of Spotify's cut, and that means that they can charge you 30% less. Apple can for Apple Music. They pointed out, and somebody said this is not the case, but they said according to Spotify, you can launch Spotify on the iPhone, but you can't say play that playlist.
They say a lot of things are specific to Spotify that are actually just part of Apple's continuing. They didn't let us make an Apple Watch app on day one when no ability existed to actually make Apple Watch app. I think there's a lot of merit to Spotify's case. I think they have a lot of facts on their side, especially in the EU, which historically uses competition and not consumer welfare to judge these sorts of cases. But through this website and this video, they don't argue facts all the time. They don't stick to them, at least. They make a lot of emotional arguments. They make a lot of, as fans of Spotify, you are being affected. They say they transpose lack of options on their parts. I think they have a sound case and could win on the merits, but they're making a lot of strategically weird decisions to me and how they're choosing to prosecute.
Well, and Apple, kind of an unprecedentedly, released a long press release contesting many of Spotify's points,
which they couldn't do if they just stuck to the fact. That's the thing, is like Apple couldn't have done a lot of this if Spotify had been clearer and more factual in their original argument.
And not
done it as a series of cartoons. Apple the one thing that Apple didn't address in the newsroom piece was the was the most damaging thing that that Spotify said, that yes, we don't want to have to pay this 30%, even if it does go down 15%. But the big deal is that Apple, your music service, doesn't have to pay that 30% or that 15%. And wasn't it interesting that when we raised our prices, you basically introduced your service at our old price? That's the thing remember that the Spotify released this as part of their complaint with the EU, basically saying, EU, you should go after these. We're basically filing an actual legal claim against Apple for anti-competitive processes, that this is the sort of thing that will really, really stick with the EU. But Renee is absolutely right. When they make these sort of emotional arguments, those are the things that you just take right off of the top to try to get at the real protein of the argument. And it's just a distraction. It gives Apple other things to address that they can easily address. Like, gee, why didn't you tell them that we cut the price down after the first year of a subscription? But yeah, I guess they should have mentioned that as well.
Spotify also says Apple disregards its own rules. This is a case with a lot of the store where Apple does things that other apps can't, including sending promotional notifications. And this one says, give a friend a free month of Apple Music, whereas third-party apps aren't allowed to do that. But again, I'm just quoting Spotify's Time to Play Fair site.
A couple of these things are really, like, when we talked about the news service and people said there was a 50-50 split on it, and some people were outraged and the big papers were never going to pay it, but other papers that had no access to distribution channels thought that 50% of hundreds of millions of users was way better than 95% of hundreds of dozens of users. And Spotify does not benefit from Apple's scale at this point because they're a big enough service on their own, but there are other apps and other businesses that do benefit from the scale of being on the App Store. So it's not a black and white thing. There might just have to be, context around how much you charge and to who. And they didn't distinguish that, like, oh, they let Uber do things they don't let us do, when Apple has never charged for in real world services, but always charged for digital services. And for example, my local restaurant will deliver to me for free, but if I want Uber Eats, I have to pay extra for it. And that's not unfair to Uber Eats. That's me paying a convenience fee. And maybe I'd be willing, like, if Apple should absolutely allow me to pay for Spotify through the web on Spotify if I want. But just like I use the Mac App Store, I would like to use the On App Store in many cases because it's central. I trust the payment transactions. It's convenient for me to only have one place to go to update everything. And I think Spotify, again, wins on some of these arguments, but I think Apple wouldn't lose by not doing some of the things that it does either.
Yeah.
So who's right in this shooting war?
And they can both be wrong.
I agree with what Rene said earlier, that they're both right in a lot of regards. I mean, Spotify, I don't know why they kind of went off the rails with some of their stuff, but they do have a couple of good points. Yeah. But they gave Apple enough to come back with some very valid points of their own.
Yeah.
So, it's going to be an interesting battle, and there's no way that this is anywhere near being finished, but.
And this is the court that made Microsoft do the browser ballot, so you never know what's going to happen. And that was real. Like, I always thought that was really dumb at the time because Chrome was on its way to being competitive. Firefox was competitive. And they had to have, like, what was it, Sleipnir and Jormungandr in the browser ballot.
The infamous Icelandic browser.
Yeah.
So earlier today, we will be streaming the Apple event. I forgot to mention this. We're going to take our life in our hands and do what we always do, which is take Apple's stream and comment on it. 10 a.m. on Monday. That's 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC. So I hope you'll come by and watch. I think what we're going to do, well, I won't say what we're going to do. I think we're going to, well, what can I say? You think I should keep it a secret. All I could say, one word, puppets.
I have a suggestion that I think might work if you want it.
Yeah.
You put it you put it slightly boxed and you have a Source Apple in the bottom left corner.
We could put Source Apple on it. That's not a bad idea. The internal debate is it's fair use. It's commentary. So it's fair use. So I don't want to do anything that kind of says, well, okay, yeah, maybe it's not quite fair use. But I think Source Apple is not a bad idea.
Yeah, I've only ever had one video flagged. It was a WWDC video where I was literally so tired I forgot to put that on.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And when I added it, I had no further problems.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So we'll do that. That's a great idea. We did stream without event Google's GDC keynote right before the show today, in which they announced Stadia, which is a really interesting play from Google, not unexpected. In a nutshell, it's a gaming platform that uses Google's powerful servers to render the game and allows you to play on almost any dumb device, even a Chromecast Ultra connected to a TV. Google says they're going to do a controller to go with it that does some interesting tricks to reduce latency. Stadia is, and they're announcing at the Game Developers Conference, so their goal was to get developers working with them. There aren't any big name games coming out, at least so far, although they had somebody from id talking about a new generation Doom game. That's not anything that's going to warm the heart of modern gamers. And they also announced some interesting features, including, first of all, they're going to use YouTube as part of the platform for this. So you could be watching a gaming video on YouTube, whether live or recorded, and there'd be a button that says play now. You press it in the browser and the game starts playing almost instantly. No downloads, no updates, no configuration. You're playing the game as fast as, they say, 4K, 60 frames per second. What they didn't say is that's going to depend an awful lot on what your internet service provider lets you get away with. I have no doubt that Google has the server capacity. In fact, they got a special NVIDIA chip, AMD chip designed for this that they say is going to give them 10 teraflops of performance. You'll have a dedicated Stadia server. You might even have the game rendered on multiple servers. And with that kind of performance, they actually have better server-side performance than an Xbox or PlayStation 4. But again, they've got to push it down that pipe that's controlled by a bunch of monopolistic companies, at least in the U.S. And it's unknown how that experience is going to be. That's interesting. They didn't say anything about price. In fact, the only thing they said about availability was sometime this year.
It's free as long as you turn the camera on. I'm kidding.
Yeah, I don't know.
I bet they're going to have to release do this in stages, I think. I don't think they can possibly open up all the tabs and let millions of people who are sampling the service in at the same time. They're going to have to say, here their first 100,000 invites went out. Now here's another 500,000 invites. I was part of the Assassin's Creed trial.
Did you play Assassin's Creed Odyssey on your Chrome browser?
I was super impressed. It worked great. But the thing is, I'm not a typical gamer. I'm not the person who is. I don't have a special pair of gaming socks to increase my performance in playing the games. I'm a really casual gamer. But the thing is, it really did feel like I was attached to a well-performing PC, a well-performing console. But I have no idea how this is going to scale up to once you have millions and millions of people trying to use this service at the same time. Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people when they scale it up to worldwide. And also the first time that it's not just latency affecting your performance in the game. They can't even have they can't even let people imagine that the reason why they got killed was because it was this stupid streaming game service that they're never going to trust, never going to play again. So hard, really, really interesting. But I'm curious to see what the marketing of that is like. The people who are interested enough in gaming that they want these really wonderful experience, but aren't necessarily willing to spend $200 to $500 on a game console. I don't know what that market is.
Well, I think anybody who has a game console or gaming PC is not the market.
Yeah. No.
Unless they're mobile. I mean, you could do it on your Android phone in the subway. Well, okay, maybe.
Remember that Diablo press conference, Leo? I'm sure that's their reaction to this right now.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some interesting features. I mean, the integration with YouTube, the potential for esports, that name Stadia does kind of imply that. The fact that you can save a game state and share it, which means that I could say, oh, this was a really good part, Andy. Let me send it to you. And then you could pick up gameplay at that exact point with all the same inventory, character. That's really interesting.
How soon before someone figures out how to sell that as a marketplace? Yeah. Saying we will take you to nearly the end of Cuphead so you can get to start at the final level.
Isn't that interesting? I never thought of that. I think that Google has thrown a lot of stuff against the wall, the devil being the implementation.
That's my question. It's like, because we wonder about Apple moving further and further afield from what you would consider core technologies. And a lot of this is core to Google, but it goes back to like how many industries can all these companies be in and be in them before they end up being General Electric or something. Right.
No chance Apple would consider something like this.
Never. I mean, the subscription gaming service might be a different take on this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting idea. And of course, they're going head to head with Microsoft's subscription service, which downloads the content onto your Xbox. Google does have, Sony does have a streaming service. They bought Gaikai. Steam, which isn't quite streaming, but.
Yeah,
but we'll have streaming soon. Microsoft will have streaming soon too. Yeah.
I have. Well, it's I was going to say that I don't know if Apple would want to do that, but my set-top box is the NVIDIA Shield, which also does streaming games through NVIDIA. And you know what? It doesn't cost more than what an Apple TV would have cost me. I get this gaming feature somewhat for free, and I have bought a few games just to sort of play around with incidentally. So. Maybe that so much of staying in business is not all about making sure that the what you would call a target demographic is being met, as so much as figuring out there are people who have money in their pockets that isn't being spent on games. How do we get them to spend that money on gaming? So maybe the point is not to become a competitive game platform, but to get people like me to suddenly want to spend $8 a month to be able to play a game that's 3 years old, but is still wonderful for this person.
Apple is in the gaming space. The iPad is a very popular gaming device. So go ahead, Jim.
I think Google has a real uphill battle in front of them here, and I'm not. I don't want to say that they're not serious, but Google has a habit of starting a lot of these things and then leaving it. But you know, they're looking for new sources of revenue too. I mean, what's the gaming industry? $150 billion. Mm-hmm. You know, the amount of money in that industry is just incredible. And if Google can grab some of that, then why not?
Yeah.
And I don't think Apple's into gaming in any serious way. No.
They've never been known for it, that's for sure.
No.
They take all the money out of casual gaming.
Right. And Google has already has all this hardware. It's just lying around. It's not like they don't have the infrastructure to do this. So anyway, I thought I'd bring it up because, it just happened. Let's see. What else were we going to talk about? GarageBand is 15. Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of amazing.
A great Rolling Stone piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A secret recording studio on Apple's Cupertino campus has made the beats of some of your favorite hits for the last 15 years.
I was hoping we could trick Dalrymple into telling us what it's like in there, but he's too savvy.
Come on, Jim. Tell us all about
good
it.
Good carpeting.
GarageBand is a revolutionary app. It really was. I mean, the things that, you know, there's all the promotion, you know, bands saying, well, I'm going to create an album on GarageBand and stuff like that. But the fact is, it really brought a lot of musicians, gave them the ability to record in a way that they never really could before. I mean, there was all the high-end gear and high-end DAWs that professionals use, but GarageBand is really the first that allowed people to sit down and put beats together and maybe play an instrument through an interface and be able to record kind of like a professional did. And
they talked.
I think
Rolling Stone interviews Patrick Stump of Fall Out Boy. He said, when he first encountered GarageBand 15 years ago, I just started recording without having to learn a new program, which was always one of the scariest things about music. He said, I never looked back. I opened it that first time and never looked back. And for people who weren't pros, it was also amazing that you could make music.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. I mean, there's no way to properly account for what GarageBand did for music. and allowing musicians to come out, because you could do any type of music that you wanted and it would help you along the way. It would conform loops to the tempo that you wanted, and it would place things, you know, properly in a session so that you could actually make a song.
Yeah.
I remember putting my son as a kid in front of GarageBand, and he was able to, I didn't show him anything. He was able to just drag things in and move things around and make a better sounding electronic song than what I was.
Here's John Mayer's Instagram post from January 6th. He says, on this day, 15 years ago, I helped Steve Jobs introduce GarageBand to the world. Looking back on it, I believe this was a kind of altruism on Steve's part, offering the app for free on Apple devices and eventually for all. He loved music as much as anything else in his life, and GarageBand was Steve's way of giving people the tools to discover the music within themselves.
Yeah. Pretty Look at that smile on Steve's face.
Yeah.
You've seen that smile not on every single product demonstration. This is genuine.
Mayer ends his Instagram post, I once knew a man who changed the world. Pretty cool. That's a great tribute to Steve. And yeah, I guess we should give Steve and his love for music a little bit of credit, because they didn't charge anything for that. And even Logic, which they do charge for, is an amazing deal at $200. I bought it once years ago, and I still, you know, still use it. It gets updated. Lots of loops. It's pretty amazing.
Well, and don't forget that Logic, when it was a separate company, sold for about $1,200.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I was particularly impressed with that piece when you think that at least at the time that GarageBand was released, they weren't necessarily saying that here is a wonderful professional creative app. It's like we're going to be bringing audio recording and music creation to the masses, just like iMovie brought video editing to the masses. And what a wonderful thing that they've created. The same person who is just plunking on a little MIDI keyboard in grammar school is using the same tool that someone is using to create the next really, really annoying hit of next summer.
Rolling Stone has a picture of the studio where Gerhard Lengling, still the German engineer who created eMagic, which is the backbone of GarageBand and Logic, still records those loops.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat, too, and decides how they're going to sound and how they're going to play back in a garage band. Really a great article. Yeah. And you could do an awful lot with garage band. It's perfect for somebody like me. Yeah. Let's see. What else should we talk about before we wrap this thing up? Oh, I guess we got to mention Qualcomm. It's another one. You win some, you lose some. $2 million
that they're never ever going to collect because of making this go another 5 years.
Yeah. Yay. So on the one hand, a jury has found that. Wow. Just got a site blocked for malware. I was going to read this article from CNET, and I got this. So, sorry, CNET, but a jury has awarded Qualcomm, what was it, like $115 million, $31 million, because they – you didn't get that, huh? Only on Brave, because they say that Apple violated Qualcomm's patents. But then that's offset a little bit by a ruling by a U.S. district judge for the Southern District of California, who on March 14th said – Qualcomm owes Apple $1 billion. So I guess they'll meet in the middle of a bridge and exchange checks. I don't know. It's just going to be continuing.
Wrestling. CEOs oil each other, oil themselves up, get naked.
There you go.
Rules. Just
yeah.
When one just take this total lack of dignity to its end point already.
WWDC dates have been announced. June 3rd at the McHenry Auditorium in San Jose. It's been there for the last few years. I guess we'll see iOS 13, the next macOS, watchOS, tvOS. Maybe we'll see new laptops there. Maybe we'll see the Mac Pro for the first time there. And then again, maybe we won't. But we'll cover it, and if they do a keynote, we'll stream it.
That'd be a great place to show the Mac Pro.
It seems to me that's where you do it, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
You don't have to have it. Could be, you could say available at the end of the year.
Or just don't say dates anymore, because after AirPower, you just gotta gotta shift.
Yeah. Just don't say anything. Do you think it'd be funny if on Monday the one more thing is AirPower?
No.
And now the moment you've seen Oprah, you've seen Jennifer Garner, now the moment you've all been waiting for. AirPower.
Yeah. I was even wondering if the reason why we saw these two announcements Monday and Tuesday was because this is if the deal of all the last deals for related to next week's event had not gone through or looked bad like 4 or 5 months from now, we would have seen a more low key Apple event with just showing off here's 20 minutes worth of news about how the store is doing. Here is some reaction to the Spotify thing, and here's some new hardware updates just for people who happen to live within Uber distance of the campus. So I think that it's interesting timing that all these are dropping a week beforehand. I do think this was their plan B.
Yeah, get this out of the way, clear the decks. 400,000 participants in a heart health study with the Apple Watch, pretty much conclusively proving that the Apple Watch will save lives. 0.5% of those participants, very tiny number, received an irregular heart rhythm notification. In people under 40, according to Sumbul Desai, who is Apple's VP of Health, a physician, in people under 40 years of age, only 0.16% received a notification. In those over 65, the number, of course, more frequent, over 3%. This tracks with what one would expect with AFib. It's not screening, it's not diagnosis, it's an initial data point. But the study, at least Apple says, the study proves that the Apple Watch is going to save lives.
I've seen debate and reaction to that.
It worked. It did what it's supposed to do, and it didn't create a huge number of... My concern was it would create a number of false positives and sent a lot of people to the doctors unnecessarily, maybe even to treatment unnecessarily. But in this study,
Apple Watch is already, it's already saved lives. So I don't know.
Well, you've got the anecdotal. What you don't know is if it was sending a lot of people to the hospital unnecessarily. And this study seems to conclude that's not the case.
Yeah.
There's no clinical data from the trial to show that these diagnoses helped these people. Christopher Kelly, who's a cardiologist at Columbia, says just because you know about a disease earlier doesn't prove it's a good thing. It's a step in the right direction, he says. The findings could lead to clinical studies where doctors determine whether early detection helps people who are at risk of AFib. At least we don't have a huge number of false positives, I guess.
Yeah. But no, Jim's absolutely right. I still remember the talk you gave at the Yosemite conference about how the Apple Watch had helped change your life. And it was such a wonderfully clear and personal statement that it really has stuck with me for 3 or 4 years now.
What tell us about that, Jim. What did it do for you?
Well, the Apple Watch gave me information that I didn't previously have. I mean, you know, we all talk about closing rings and things like that, but it's not necessarily about closing rings. It's about knowing how active you are. And that's what was really personal for me, because I ended up losing a lot of weight because I would have the information on my wrist to know exactly, you know, how active I was and how much more active I should be or could be. And everything that I did, I knew that there was a consequence for. So if I decide not to go for a walk today, well, there's going to be a slight consequence for that tomorrow if I hop on the scale. If I go out and eat a Big Mac today and don't exercise, there's a consequence for that. And I know that. I know that now, and I can actually see it, you know, on my watch. So I didn't stop going out, you know, for dinner with my friends and have a nice Italian meal and a couple of beer or a burger or whatever. I just knew that I needed to exercise and I needed to keep up this routine. And it's not about, you know, I'm going to have a burger today, so I'm going to walk 5 extra miles. No, I walk for 30 minutes and at a decent pace and, you know, just go from there. And that's really what it was all about for me.
Actually, and that kind of, I think that's a more, the thing that always concerned me about, it saves lives, is it implies that, oh, you're going to die, and if you didn't have the Apple Watch, you wouldn't know that. I think the kind of change, lifestyle and long-term change that it gave you is really a much better example of the value of the Apple Watch. I don't think focusing on the guy who would have been dead tomorrow if he hadn't gotten a warning today is
well, that's more important for him, though.
Sure, for him, it's a big deal.
Exactly, yeah.
Absolutely. But it's not the reason everybody should run out and buy an Apple Watch.
I was going to say, normally the skeptical view towards anything is, this is all anecdotal evidence, but if I'm the person telling the anecdote that I wasn't going to be seeing a doctor for the next 6
that's
months,
true.
But I saw him tomorrow and he said, okay, guess what?
I'll give you
call
that.
Your family. We're putting you into the ER right now. That's a good anecdote for me.
And I think that the gym story, though, is much more common. And much more difficult to kind of promote in an advertisement. But that's a real difference. And I think that that's absolutely true. It gives you that, you put it perfectly, the information you need and the incentive to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think one more story. I just really loved this story in The Verge that came from a leak, a Twitter leak, by somebody named Redphone M68 or the Red M68 on Twitter, the original iPhone prototype. Tom Warren, who usually writes about Windows on The Verge, wrote about this, and it really is interesting. This is the mechanical, it's really a board, a logic board that was provided to engineers working on the iPhone in secret in 2006 and 2007. It has all the features of the iPhone on what looks like maybe a 2FX motherboard.
Oh, they deleted the serial port? Those guys just won't stop.
Yeah, it had a serial port.
It
had a bunch of really interesting things, including, notice, a 30-pin dock connector. So, and in fact, Tom says that Red M68 says, when I connected that to an Apple and ran iTunes, it said, I see an iPhone. You want me to restore it? It has a screen.
This was pre-Wallaby, right? Is this what they used right before the Wallaby?
I don't know the exact story behind this. The impression I got is it's before the release of the iPhone. And nowadays, of course, engineers are working on something that really looks a lot more like a phone. At this point, they may not have even wanted people to know, you know, that it was a phone that they were working on. There is a SIM card slot on it, though, and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth antennas. Pretty cool to see this, and it's been kept secret. Somebody had to leak it out, I guess.
I really hope that Apple starts to embrace its history, because it is fascinating when you get to see, here's how the sausage is made, but the ingredients in the sausage are actually really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And people see that this is what people were, what engineers were interfacing with. This is what a developer had to deal with to get the first notepad app up and running. You eat this up with a spoon. And people who are young engineers, even people who are 10 years old who just have learned what an engineer is, this is what the struggle is like. This is how you create this beautiful thing that winds up in stores. Lots of work, lots of testing, lots of struggle. I just hope that Apple internally is maintaining a good database of this stuff. And I would love to see them start to release art books like this, that here are Apple prototypes.
Yeah.
Although maybe it's like the reason why we still don't know the technical details of the F-14 Tomcat, because some of the data from 1973 is still classified. But it's such an inspirational and such a great piece of history.
Yeah, and I'm sure people within Apple take this completely for granted, or within any company that's designing prototype hardware would take this for granted. But for us, the unwashed masses, this is really interesting to see that this is what they use to prototype the phone and get the first operating system up and running. Imagine the person who made the first phone call on this thing. Must have been a pretty good feeling.
First time I had to purple restore it.
Yeah.
The most expensive pizza ever.
Yeah. It says copyright 2007 Apple on it. It also says do not connect battery without removing J49. So before you connect a battery, you might want to go find J49, wherever that is. All right, let's take a timeout and come back with your picks of the week. Fellas, get those ready while I talk about Hover, our sponsor, and I'm proud to say our official domain registrar. All of our domains are registered at hover.com because it is the best place, frankly, to do it. It's fast. It's easy. There's no upsell. They give you Whois privacy by default, no extra charge, and they make it very easy to manage your DNS. It's really the best place. And I have to say, you may not know it, but you need a domain name right now. If you don't already have a domain name for your business or for your personal family name, I have one, actually several for our family name, you ought to run out and get it. When kids are born or couples get married, buy them a domain name. It's the best gift you can give them. Register it for 10 years. When my kids were born, I did that. I registered their names.com for 20 years, figuring by the time they're 21, they'll know whether they want this or not. Both of them have kept it, I might add. Hover has over 400 extensions to choose from. This is kind of hysterical. A lot of people like the .me. It's called a TLD, so Leo.me, for instance. It'd be a great place for your personal portfolio if you're an artist or a performer, or even if you're a teenager. I think it's really important to get teenagers to create their first website, to own their own domain name, because that's how you control your reputation on the net, is by putting great stuff up there right now. Start now. And .me is fun. It stands out from the .com or .net. It's nice and short. Great way to have a resume, you know. LeoLaporte.me, showcase what you're all about. Hover has great support, best-in-class support team, a nice bunch of Canadians. No upsells. When you get there, you don't going to have to click 100 times just to buy a domain name. And look at all of the services they support with one-click setup. So if, for instance, you're a WordPress user, boom, press the button and it's all set up for you. So you don't have to do a lot of elaborate DNS messing. And I honestly think it's important. Yeah, a lot of these places, you can get a domain name from them. Honestly think it's important for you to have your own domain name that you arranged, that you registered. Even if you're using a service to create your site, you want to make sure you own the domain. You got to go to hover.com. Become your own best advocate. The .me domain's on sale this month. Right now, $9.99. That's for a whole year, $9.99. And if you've never used Hover before, you'll get an additional 10% off any of the domain names that you can get there. I have .pizza, .ninja, .io. I just created a URL shortener with Bitly, and I wanted to get as short a domain as I could for that. And I signed up to Hover for leo.ist. Leoist. So that's my Bitly domain shortener, leo.ist. Hover.com/twit. Go right now. Check out their deals. Find a domain name. There's lots of fun ones, too. It's time to get your portfolio up and running with .me, or maybe your pizza joint up with .pizza, or your ninja training facility up with .ninja. It's hover.com/twit, the best place to get your domain name. And now it's time, the moment you've all been waiting for, air power. No. Jim Dalrymple and his pick of the week.
All right, I'm going to surprise you with this one, Leo.
Not rock and roll?
it is, but it's not a new band like I normally do. I normally have a new good hard rock band, but there was an album that was just released from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
I've heard of them.
The Definitive Career, and it includes some notes, which is what I find very interesting, from Apple Music, where Mike Campbell, Tom's longtime guitarist, tells you about writing some of the songs. And would write some of the songs, give the tapes to Tom, and he tells stories about how the songs were written. And it's just so great. Some of the songs are from what's that band called? Mud Crutch, which is the first Tom Petty band out of Gainesville, Florida, which really launched his
Mud Crutch.
his career.
Nice.
One of the songs he talks about, he gave the music to Tom, and Tom went over to Bob Dylan's hotel room.
Wow.
And they wrote the lyrics for it. They, while watching TV, they turned the volume down and they were watching. So I love this.
I'm going to run out and get it.
I think it's something that everybody will really appreciate.
Next time I'm on. Yes.
I'm back to hard rock. So there you go.
This is great. It's called The Best of Everything. Yes. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, a 4-disc set. And it sounds like something worth looking at on Apple Music for those additional notes. That's really cool.
Yeah. Well, they actually gave the Mike Campbell was interviewed by Apple Music.
Nice.
And he gave those notes are in the Apple Music content.
Nice.
For those. Yeah. So
that sounds great. So that's a good reason to have Apple Music. Thank you, Jim. Loopinsight.com. Andy Inako, what do you have for us?
Inspired by the new iPad mini, my recommendation is my favorite word processor / get ideas out of your head and in an organized fashion onto a small screened iOS device, Ulysses. It started off as a focus-oriented text editor, which means that if you maximize it, you just have an empty screen with just your words in it. But they kept adding more and more features without reducing its simplicity and its directness. They just came out with version, I think, 15 last week. And hands down, my favorite app for larger-screened iOS devices and for my Mac is Scrivener. And they do have a wonderful phone app. But when it comes to I need to have an app that's on this small screen, device that I can either write 1,000 words on or just some very, very organized notes and record keeping sort of things. It's such a powerful and flexible tool. And I also like the fact that it is a subscription app. So it costs $40 a year, which sounds like a lot of money, but it's a wonderful app. And the fact of the matter is the fact that they are making sure that they get paid for their work means that they get to keep coming out with wonderful, wonderful new features. There's so many apps that I've spent like $9 for total 3 years ago that have barely gotten an update since because someone had to go back to their lives and had to go back to their jobs. They don't make enough money off of this to sustain development of the project. But Ulysses is one of those apps where whenever I see that automatic debit on my card, I think, oh, that's right. Okay, good. Thank you. I would have forgotten otherwise. Thank you for continuing to give me access to Ulysses.
You know, it's funny. I renew that every year. I hardly ever use it, but it's such a beautiful app. I just kind of want to thank them for creating it. It's simple and yet very, very effective.
It's hard for me to think of an app that transitions from phone to iPad mini to iPad Pro to desktop as easily as Ulysses does. This is a brilliant piece of design.
Nice. I want to give thanks to Scooter X in our chat room, by the way, who is gave me the link to Ken Kashenda's tweet. Ken is, of course, the guy who worked on the original iPhone UI, the software, and Ken had pictures of these of this prototype board in use with people working on it. That's pretty wild. So if you don't follow Ken on Twitter, KOCIENDA, this is really, really, really cool to see.
Henri was the guy who ran UIKit until he retired a few years ago.
Yeah, he refers to Henri Lamoureux, who's
Lamoureux. Yeah, he was amazing. He built a lot of the modern underpinnings of iOS and a lot of the stuff we use today.
Man, you know, when you experience something like this in your life, it really is a high point you never forget. That's really cool. Thank you, Ken, for sharing those on Twitter. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So there's this great iPhone photography app called Halide, made by Bensonovsky and Sebastian DeWitt, and they have launched a second app called Spectre. The first one, Halide, was really working on manual focus and depth of field. This one uses machine learning to do long exposures. They're calling it smart long exposure. So what it does is take a number of frames and then use machine learning to sort of smooth it out into one of the shots that you would get if you had a classic long exposure system, but it eliminates a lot of the problems that come with those. Like, you don't always have a tripod conveniently situated for every time you want to use it, for example, or, sometimes they're really short because they can't get consistency from enough frames. So this just lets you point and click. I mean, it's better if you're stabilized, obviously, but really you can just go out, and if you see something like water or traffic or just anything that you think would make a really interesting looking long exposure shot, you can just take it with Spectre and then experiment with it to sort of get the most that you can get out of it. And again, it's, Apple makes a very simple camera app for iOS. It has a lot of basic functionality, but they make a lot of APIs for a lot of developers to do a lot of really cool things. And Sebastian and Ben have been doing some really amazing things with it.
Very nice. Yeah, I downloaded it. I haven't had occasion to use it. It is also, if you have a tripod, it's tripod aware.
Yeah. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. Friends, we have done it again. Thank you so much for being here. Renee Ritchie does the Vector podcast at imore.com/vector. Does a little bit of writing on the side.
Try it.
All right. And he's getting ready for the new Harry Potter game, Wizards Unite. I signed up for the beta, but I haven't got it yet. My last chance to get. I'm level 39 on Pokemon Go. The clock is ticking.
The Equinox event just started 30 minutes ago.
Yes.
So you can go get some extra stuff.
You know what I love is that they've sent the Lunatone to the Southern Hemisphere.
Yes.
And we get the Solar.
Solrock, yeah.
Solrock.
And they're shiny right now.
Which I like. Oh, shiny Solrocks. All right. Yeah. I'm going to put off security now. I got to run outside.
Do it. Sorry, Steve.
Thanks for being here, as always, Renee.
Oh, and I'll just say that if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel yet, this would be a really good, no spoilers, but it would be a really good week to do it.
Oh, I bet. You're going to go to the Apple event on Monday. Will you not be here Tuesday next week?
I will not be here Tuesday next week. No, I'm flying back. I believe I'm flying back on Tuesday.
If you want to know what he thinks, you'll just check it out on Vector or on imore.com.
Renee, I want to see selfies in your Instagram of you with cool people. Are there cool people? What should I say?
I'm sure they're going to have security, like Jim and Jennifer Aniston and Jennifer Garner are the same security, just shoving plebes like me away, not coming anywhere near us.
I am expecting Jim Dalrymple to deliver us a selfie with Jen Garner. I think this is a must, Jim.
Oh, my God. That would be so nice.
You'll find it. If it goes up, it'll be at loopinsight.com or on his Twitter, at J Dalrymple. Jim, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Anything you want to plug?
Thank you. No, you did it all.
All right. I always give him a chance. He's so humble. Doesn't have to plug the beard, though. It speaks for itself. I mean, literally speaks for itself. And Andy Iannacco from WGBH in Boston, Boston Public Radio, and Iannacco.com, Iannatko. Anything you want to plug, my friend?
No, I will be, if you're going to be in the Southern New England area, I will be in my office watching the keynote with bated breath.
Maybe we'll get you on then, because we do want to have a couple of smart fellas and gals talking. I know Megan will be joining us as well. Should be a lot of fun. We'll see you on Monday again, 10 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC. We will be live streaming along with Apple our commentary on the celebrities as they take the stage at the Steve Jobs Theater, and we'll be back next week to do Mac Break Weekly as we are every week around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. 1800 UTC. You can watch live streams at twit.tv/live. We have live audio and video, so you can watch and listen. And if you do that, make sure you check into the chat room. That's where all the kids who are watching live gather. IRC.twit.tv. And, of course, on-demand versions of everything we do are available from the website. In this case, it's twit.tv/MBW. Or subscribe in your favorite podcast app That way you'll always have a copy ready when you need some entertainment on the road. Thanks for listening. Now it's time to get back to work because break time is over.